Kia ora, I'm Jo Moyer. Welcome to Focus on Politics. Just 1 week ago on this program, Deputy Political Editor Craig McCulloch warned how quickly things can unravel for the government if the public gets a whiff of incompetency.
Perception is everything, and it doesn't take long for impressive to turn into shambolic and incompetent. The so-called Team of 5 Million had rewarded Labour in the polls, but it can just as easily punish it.
With political polls few and far between in these days of a financially struggling media landscape, it was pure luck One News had locked in a Colmar-Brunton poll that meant it was in the field quizzing the public in a week the government was battling. It's also 5 weeks since opposition leader Todd Muller ousted Simon Bridges in an extraordinary sequence of events, giving the public time to decide whether they like this guy better than the last one at the helm of the National Party. The results came in from TVNZ political editor Jessica Mutch-Mackay on the 6pm news on Thursday.
Labour is on 50, down 9. National gets 38, up 9. The Greens are back in the game on 6. ACT gets a boost and is on 3. And New Zealand First has dipped, now sitting on 2. And the Māori Party and the New Conservative Party are both steady on 1. Let's translate these numbers to seats in Parliament. Labour can govern alone with 62 red seats, just over the magic number of 61. But the Greens bring in 7 seats, giving backup. There are 47 blue national seats. Add in 4 from ACT and they fall short of the number needed to form a government. Don't forget on these numbers, New Zealand First are out of the mix. But on election day, they do tend to bounce back.
The poll was done over the course of Saturday to Wednesday, so let's rewind to earlier this week and dissect the shambolic display put on by the Health Minister and his publicly beloved Director General of Health, Dr. Ashley Bloomfield. By Tuesday, it had been an entire week of repeated questioning of Dr. Bloomfield as to how many people had left managed isolation without being tested for COVID-19. The question was prompted by the case of 2 women being given compassionate leave to travel down the North Island on 13th of June to be with a dying parent. They later tested positive on June the 16th after being allowed to leave isolation without first getting a test. Dr. Bloomfield had instructed everyone to be tested twice before leaving isolation, and while David Clark failed to ask for any proof it was actually happening, he took his Director General at his word that it was. At his 1pm press conference on Tuesday, Dr. Bloomfield repeatedly apologised for not being able to answer questions about who else of the more than 2,000 people who had left isolation had done so without a single test.
I will get you that number, and I'm sorry I haven't got it. I would like to have it as well.
Dr. Bloomfield insisted there was nothing untoward going on.
There's no obstruction. I can be really clear about that. I just want to be able to give you the right numbers.
By this stage, the opposition leader had declared the lack of answers from the ministry a national disgrace.
The fact that even today, we are at a position that neither the Prime Minister, nor David Clark, nor Megan Woods can look at anyone in New Zealand and say exactly how many people left quarantine or left managed isolation without being tested is a national disgrace.
At 6:30pm, a press release from the Ministry of Health landed. 51 of the 54 people who left managed isolation on compassionate exemption grounds between June 9 and June 16 hadn't been tested. That period is the date mandatory testing kicked in at Dr. Bloomfield's request, also the first day of Alert Level 1, through to the date the 2 UK women tested positive for COVID-19. Amongst all of this was the ongoing tale of whether or not a homeless man had found his way into a hotel for a free 14-day stay on the taxpayer, an allegation made the week before by National's health spokesperson Michael Woodhouse. Dr. Bloomfield's officials hadn't deciphered how many people left isolation without being tested, but they had done the legwork on the homeless man.
As far as we can tell, this is cannot be verified and may well be an urban myth. Sorry to disappoint you there.
Michael Woodhouse is standing by his version of events.
Well, I don't know how I'm going to respond, but I find it extraordinary that they would commit so many resources viewing CCTV footage, reviewing 1,706 records, when they can't even tell the New Zealand public how many tests the people in managed isolation have actually undertaken.
roll on Wednesday, and Health Minister David Clark and Dr Bloomfield were before Select Committee.
I'm not going to deny that there have been issues along the way, including most recently with the implementation of the government's clear policy on managed isolation and testing. There has been considerable and legitimate public interest in how many people have left managed isolation without a test.
But it was questions from the media after the Select Committee that set a new course of events.
Look, the Director General has already acknowledged that the system didn't deliver here.
Yeah, but what about you, because you have oversight?
Well, I've answered this question for you previously.
And David Clark's criticism of Dr Bloomfield didn't stop there.
It's not what I expected to happen. There were some very clear protocols, of course, around the way in which they interacted with their family members when they were out on that compassionate leave, appropriate PPE and so on. But I'm not happy with how the system operated. I've made that clear.
These aren't new statements. Mr Clark has been saying much the same for days on end. Here's Deputy Political Editor Craig McCulloch explaining what made it more memorable and damaging for the Health Minister.
But the difference this time, the camera panned. And there, standing quietly in the background, the man himself, Ashley Bloomfield.
Hello darkness, my old friend.
A crestfallen look on his face, triggering an outpouring of emotion online, Twitter seemingly united in fury at the treatment of the man who had guided them through lockdown. And that feeling only fuelled by an interview given by the minister here on Checkpoint.
Do you take any responsibility for this mistake?
Well, look, I take responsibility for fixing it.
Or are you putting it all at Dr. Bloomfield's feet?
This clearly is an operational error.
By Thursday, parts of the country were so outraged by Dr. Bloomfield's treatment that a campaign had started to raise money to send flowers and cupcakes to the man who helped guide the so-called team of 5 million through the COVID epidemic. Even the health minister realised his error and was quick to start throwing compliments and even an offer to add to the bouquets of flowers.
I would be very happy to buy Dr. Bloomfield some flowers, I have to say, just about on any day.
Oh, I might chip in a dollar or two on that.
I haven't received any flowers. I'd love if people have money they wish to put to a good cause that they donate it to a local charity.
With the Prime Minister in Christchurch, her deputy, Winston Peters, was answering questions on her behalf in the House from Deputy National Leader Nikki Kaye.
Does she believe it is acceptable for Dr. David Clark to make Dr. Ashley Bloomfield accept all responsibility for the failures of her government in testing and managed isolation?
On behalf of the Prime Minister, unlike the member and her colleagues who are paragons of propriety and infallibility, Dr. Bloomfield and Dr. Clark are not infallible. But the response we have seen this far in this country, by international comparison, is seriously exemplary.
That's right. I do want to just warn the Prime Minister in these circumstances to be a little bit careful with the ironic language.
Supplementary question. Is Dr. Ashley Bloomfield the scapegoat for her government's failures?
On behalf of the Prime Minister, this country is seriously indebted to Dr. Ashley Bloomfield. He is a civil servant who has done his best to do his job. Beg pardon?
He's a public servant.
Oh, okay, no longer civil, no longer servants. With respect, a public servant has done his best to do his job, and again, it's a team effort. We're asking we're asking 5 million New Zealanders to be frontline officers in our battle against COVID-19. It includes the people over there. We're all in this together. As we said, there will be mistakes. Our job is to learn from them and fix them.
And Jacinda Ardern is still standing by her minister.
Of course, that is what I've continued to say. And one thing, you know, that I will acknowledge, you know, there will be some weeks that are better than others. And what's most important is that we continue to work together collectively alongside the likes of the expertise of Dr. Bloomfield, alongside the Health Minister and alongside our whole team.
It was the Prime Minister back in April who registered the lack of public confidence in her Health Minister when she said if it hadn't been for the COVID disaster, she would have sacked David Clark after learning he'd breached lockdown rules with mountain bike rides and family trips to the beach. That confidence has taken another big hit this week, and by Thursday night, the Colmar-Brunton poll landed. It's hard to say how much of the drop in Labour support is due to the COVID botch-ups and how much is the national bounce reflecting a new leader. Political editor Jane Patterson spoke to Morning Report's Corinne Dan on Friday.
This is going to be encouraging to National because, of course, huge amounts at stake here after you take out another leadership team, Simon Bridges and Paula Bennett. So this poll was, they'd really be looking for some vindication of that move and also, of course, that they're moving in the right direction in terms of voters. So interestingly, a straight swap of 9 points between Labor and National. So I think that shows that there is mobility within that vote and potentially some of the vote that National lost last time went to Labor is maybe a kind of protest vote. But it shows that voters are looking, that they're willing to move, and that Todd Muller has had a bump. But we would also expect that after a leadership campaign. It would have been very, very difficult for him if he had not moved the dial on this poll at all.
The key issue with Muller seems to be the contrast in what we get, I guess we call political likability. He's come in at 13 on the preferred Prime Minister, which I think is higher than Bridges ever got.
Yes, and again, they'll be looking at that, and also that approval rating that initially was, that his first one was much better than Simon Bridges as well. But I think as all new leaders, they'll be given a bit of leeway. People are looking to see who he is. He's really going to need to up his profile, though. We've seen him in the last week in particular over those border closures, but really I would have expected a much more of a full court press from him. So he has been getting out and about, but that's one thing, he just doesn't have the time. But people don't seem to be objecting strongly to his style as such, so those personal approval ratings looking pretty good. And as he signalled at the start of his leadership that he wouldn't be doing opposition for opposition's sake, and he has done that, so maybe that as a foil to Simon Bridges is working for him initially, although, as I said, this is very early and you would expect that a new leader would get a bump after the events of the last month or so.
All right, if we look at Labor, they'd be, on the one hand, they'd be very happy with 50. That's a historically high number for them, but they have come down 9. And how much do you think might be attributable to the bungling with the border over the last week or so?
Look, I think that shine has come off those really high numbers. And to be honest, I never really expected them to be sustained at that point. Those polls were taken at an extraordinary time. So I'm not surprised at all to see them come back. The handling of the border, I'm sure, would have had some impact, but I think it's probably more due to people moving back to National under the leadership. But that, of course, is something they're going to want to exploit. They need to get more of that vote back from that Labor Party. So they will have to look at those voters who have shown that they're willing to move between those two parties. Still a massive challenge for Todd Muller.
Really, the big loser here is New Zealand First, because the Greens at 6, look, they'd be pretty happy with that. ACT is on 3. And so it seems New Zealand First is not getting any traction. And it's interesting because there's a clear strategy emerging from them over the last few weeks and months about decoupling a bit from the Labor government, showing that they are the ones that are able to stop pieces of legislation. But maybe the timing's off, or that's just not resonating.
This is must be very concerning for New Zealand First to only be at basically 2%, just under 2%. This is worrying territory. Now, the New Zealand First leader, Winston Peters, bug of the polls, but they will be looking at these numbers with some concern. New Zealand First notoriously poll lower than they do on the election, but the problem for them too is the lower that they get, you get into a dangerous territory, because if people don't think that you're going to make it into Parliament, then they won't vote for you. So it starts to become a bit of a downward spiral. So again, a seat like Northland would become increasingly important for them to gain an electorate seat. And the other interesting one is ACT. We're really starting to see their votes stabilise at around 3%, and that would mean that ACT could come back with 3 to 4 MPs, which could really be of a help to National. So the numbers moving around, but yes, a couple of months to go, and Labor will be happy with where they are. I would say National will be encouraged, but a pretty dire result for the coalition partner. And of course, we're not sure when it's going to happen, but potentially the SFO coming back between now and the election, making the decision as to whether to pursue charges over the New Zealand First Foundation. If that does happen, of course, another very big problem for New Zealand First to deal with ahead of an election campaign.
With an election just months away, the race is on for Jacinda Ardern and Todd Muller to get around the country and shake as many hands as possible. On Friday, Ms Ardern hit Queenstown to announce $85 million would be spent on shovel-ready projects, including a town centre upgrade and new arterial routes. In comparison, Mr Muller was in Hawke's Bay, unveiling the first of his campaign hoardings. The benefit of being in government, of course, is being able to turn up and announce projects worth hundreds of millions of dollars, a luxury National doesn't have. That's Focus on Politics. I'm Jo Moyer. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to listen to this program again, head to rnz.co.nz/focusonpolitics. Mā te wā.